Welcome to Agency for Change, the podcast that brings you the stories of people creating positive change in the world. We explore what inspires these change makers, the work they're doing, and how they share their message. Each of us can play a part in change, and these are the people who show us how.
Hi, everyone. This is Lynn Weinman, founder and chief strategist of Kid Glove, and welcome to another episode of Agency for Change podcast. Now, most of us remember where we were during the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Today's guest, Noah Teitelbaum, was teaching in a New York City classroom. His experience led him down a path to sharing the practice of social emotional learning and mindfulness curriculum as the executive director of Empowering Education. Noah, it's great to have you here today. How are you?
I'm doing well. So glad to be here with you.
Fantastic. Hey, Noah, would you start by sharing more about that story? I can't imagine what it would be like to be teaching in New York City on that day.
Well, it is a day I will not forget, and it was about a week into my first year of teaching fifth graders, or teaching at all, really. Anyone who's listening who is a school teacher knows how difficult the first year or two is when you're a new teacher. The dropout rate is high, and I almost was part of that statistic. That day, I remember this dean knocking on my classroom door. I opened it up and he said, "Mr. T, do not let the kids out of the room." "What's going on?" And he said, "They're attacking. They're attacking with planes." At that moment, I very clearly had this thought: I'm dreaming. And then I turned around and I looked at my kids and I could tell that this was not a dream. Oh my. And I don't usually tell people this because I've told the story a lot because it is a motivating part of what I do and why I do it. But the next thought I have, and I'm slightly embarrassed, is I'm going to get the day off. I was so overwhelmed by what I was doing that is the second thought I had.
Wow.
And that was not the most difficult day of the year, I often tell people. And it was also a day when I saw that I did not know what I was doing, which was, I got that message many times that year and the next year. And I still get that message from time to time. But that year, I really got it a lot. I did not know how to handle the conversations that needed to happen. Part of that is who can handle those conversations? Who's trained? So few of us are trained in even just basic mental health, but I really didn't have the tools to help children through difficult moments, let alone myself, honestly. It was a powerful day for me and powerful 2 years in that school. I would not ask to do those years again, but they are some of the most important years I've ever lived through.
Wow. Noah, I have 3 kids of my own. And I just remember doing volunteer work and having a group of fifth grade age kids for an hour and thinking, oh my goodness, I love their teachers, because really it's very hard work. And on a day like that, I just can't imagine. So talk to me more. So how did you take this like impactful time and difficult time and take it into a business where you're sharing social, emotional learning and mindfulness with teachers and schools?
Well, my career stayed in elementary and middle school for quite a while. After 2 years at that school, I was ready to go to law school. I had the acceptance letter, and I thought, you know, I think this teaching stuff, I like to do it a little bit more just to try to get it right, because I knew I had not done a good job. So I found a school that was one of these high performing charter schools called North Star. And I was lucky enough to get hired there. And that's where I learned to teach. I had this great assignment, which I thought was going to be terrible. It was my second year there, where I had the same math class to teach three times a day. And I thought, this is going to be so boring. But it actually was the best part of my teaching career, because I really learned to craft lessons and didn't have to keep thinking of new content all day long. I just could work on the delivery. So I went on to become an instructional coach. And those schools are tremendous schools. They get great results. But I also had in the back of my head still this feeling like I'm missing something. And a hallmark of those schools is that they are very firm. And that great teachers are firm. Those schools tend to be quite firm. And I felt like, I don't know if I would send my own child to this school. And that didn't sit well with me. And I know that they've done lots of work, but I did have that little something off. And I also was still quite angry. You know, I think I went into therapy on like day three of beginning teaching.
Wow.
Because it's very stressful. And, you know, we're all very well put together people when we don't have a lot of stress. teaching really brought out a lot of the things that I need, that I'm glad I got to wrestle with. And so I still felt like there's something I'm not getting here. I went on to work in adult education, running a test prep company or helping build it, Manhattan Prep, really enjoyed working with adults, because some of those issues that I had to confront weren't getting pushed by adults. And in the test prep world, that's where I first learned about the connection between mindfulness and learning. We had a great teacher at Manhattan Prep, Logan Thompson, who brought in his own mindfulness work. And I was head of the teachers of that company. We started developing trainings for students in mindfulness, because test prep really stresses people out.
Yeah, it does.
And so managing that anxiety, we realized, is incredibly important. And research shows that it has a positive impact on academics. So that's where I first saw that connection. And then when I finished working in that world of test prep and went on to take over Empowering Education, I was really drawn to this work, because I thought I could have used things like this when I was a teacher. I try to build things that I think are really useful, not aspirationally useful.
Yeah, that is really great. And, you know, when you talk about social emotional learning, I think I know what that means, but do you mind explaining it more in depth and talking a little bit more about what the benefits of it are?
Well, social-emotional learning is a broad category, and it definitely sounds good, whatever it is. And what it is generally considered now is defined by CASEL, an organizing body, and they have five competencies: so self-regulation, self-awareness, social awareness, relationship skills, and responsible decision-making. Those are five big categories in themselves. Most of those are probably pretty self-explanatory. What does self-regulation mean? Calming down, self-awareness. What am I feeling? Which is hard for many adults, definitely hard for children. Social awareness, noticing what's happening in the people around you. Relationship skills, how to meet people, how to build relationships, how to overcome conflict. That's a big one. And decision-making, that'd be things like SMART goals, being thoughtful about what you do. The things you learn if you're taking an explicit class where we're really explicitly talking about it smell like the things you learned in marriage counseling, if you did that. So
okay.
I statements, coping skills,
yep.
How to have an argument in a healthy manner, naming your feelings, things like that. The benefit, and I'm a little annoyed that I have to do this, but the benefits have been shown that there's an 11% increase in academic outcomes. And that's important to say to people. But it's also, don't you just want to have a successful emotional and social life? Isn't that also right. in itself, like even if it wasn't going to lead to better scores, isn't yeah. that valuable just to be a person who enjoys your life better and can navigate the challenges? So our program has been studied, like many others, and shown to have an impact on a positive impact on resilience, self-control, social competence, and more broadly, these SCL has been shown to reduce some of the negative things that could happen in life.
Yeah, I think about what the world would be like if every kid had those tools in their toolbox. That's pretty cool. I'm going to diverge just a little bit. At Kid Glove, our operations director has mindfulness training. And every once in a while, she senses that it's becoming a pressure cooker here. And she'll take us through an exercise. But I think maybe once you've got all the schools sold on this curriculum, you ought to think about a workplace curriculum. And I'm actually serious about that. I think particularly what we're going through in 2020 with the pandemic and everything is changing, I think it could be really, really helpful as well.
I love that idea. I just did a workshop on trauma-informed management. So we started figuring out what does it look like to manage in a way that acknowledges that there's lots of trauma in the workplace. You know, people come with their own trauma. Right. So I think you're right. I think you're onto something.
Okay. Well, when you're ready to start up that product line, you call me and I'll help you test it out.
Perfect.
So could you tell me actually along those lines more about how your company, Empowering Education, delivers these tools to school systems? Like what does that look like?
I'll tell you the tools that we have and how we do it. But underneath it, the important thing is a concern that we have, which is that people buy programs and don't use them. And that seems like the biggest loss and waste. There's a big problem we're trying to solve, which is how to help children and educators with social and emotional learning. But our specific focus is how do we make a program that is going to be used?
Yeah.
That's sort of our North Star now. And for us, that means making it very accessible. And that word has lots of meanings to us. So all of our content is digitally delivered, which wasn't very hard for us to pivot for COVID-19 because we already had our stuff online. We already had slides for the teachers to show, things like that.
That is great. That was great timing on your part to have that all ready to go.
Right. I would still choose not to have had COVID-19 come out. The other meanings of accessibility, having our program bilingual, having our program be tested in schools with lots of different kinds of kids, hiring people with different backgrounds so that we try to have a diverse program or culturally responsive one. And then finally making it really easy to use. And what we had in mind, and if people listening are also sort of building things to try to help change, is you know, think about the hardest person to satisfy and build your product for that or your program for that. So in my mind, I thought, well, this is our program, social emotional learning with mindfulness in it. Who's going to be the most not into this? And I pictured this older, set in her ways teacher in the middle of the country, and I'm sure I'm just revealing all of my biases, which are completely unfounded, and someone should correct me. But
Noah, I have that teacher in my mind. Like as soon as you said that, I'm not going to say her name, but from my past, that's exactly who I'm thinking of.
So
she would not have liked this.
Yeah, she would not have liked. And maybe her principal said, "Here, you need to do this program." She goes, "Oh." And so I thought, well, she is this. And then there was another one who was younger and really stressed out. That was a little bit more of me from my own days. And those two people, I said, okay, you don't have a lot of time and you're not sure this is something you want to do. What can we build that you'll do? And so we provided scripts, which I think I don't want a script, but they want scripts. For the mindfulness, mindfulness, that's weird. So any reference to anything woo-woo, not in our program. We provided recordings of children leading mindfulness.
Wow.
And lots of games and hands-on thing. And for the young ones, we wrote children's stories, because children learn so well through stories. So that's our program in a nutshell.
That's pretty diverse. That's great to have all those different ways, because there are so many different teachers, and the teachers are the gatekeepers, aren't they? Yeah. Noel, what do you say to those then, because obviously you just referenced it, what do you say to those who are skeptical about bringing this practice into a classroom?
I'll first say that I don't run into that many people who are skeptical at this point, but I do hear that sometimes, and I could see why someone would say that. Their job is to teach academics. I think the truth is that we are always teaching social and emotional learning whenever we are around children. We are modeling how to manage ourselves, how to manage others, manage our feelings, how to relate to others. You can't help but be modeling these things. These are the ways we are with each other and with ourselves. So we're always teaching social and emotional learning. The question is, do we actually like what we're teaching?
Yeah, if we stop
and think about it. So I hope that our program helps someone go, wow, this is what I want to teach. Because we all end up making up stuff too. Kids are going to get upset. Kids get upset. I can't help it. What do you say? I just made up stuff. So might as well get something that's research based, that's been tried and honed to help you as a teacher actually say something that's useful. But if you don't have a vocabulary and a toolkit that's been explicitly taught, it's harder to be consistent with that and really have those ideas.
And then you go into panic mode. And then maybe if it was a crisis with a small C, it gets bigger and bigger. So Noah, you have a really unique background. So you've been an educator, you're an entrepreneur, you're a change maker, you're doing something really different. What is that experience like for you?
I'm loving it. I love the variety of things I get to work on. Even when I was at a large company like Kaplan, I did my best to have a variety of things to work on. That's what I enjoy. So last year I was working on a website, trying to develop partnerships, and develop programming and write children's stories. So I love the variety that small organizations demand. What I like about running a nonprofit particularly is that it's as clear as ever that providing value is success. And here, providing value is something that I can be personally proud of, aligned with my values. I was in business school recently, and the most interesting class was one about corporate responsibility, corporate social responsibility. And this professor was very provocative, and he said, you know, providing value is social responsibility. It's not our job to decide what the values are. So whatever you do that provides value is a good thing for the world. You know, we had lots of arguments. Is, you know, providing unhealthy food that people value for the world? But here I don't have to argue as much about those things. I can really pour myself in. I'm not personally, like, I don't get fired up about competition with other companies or organizations. I don't like putting like checklists of our features versus theirs and, you know, the best, blah, blah, blah. So just being able to really serve the people who I work with, it's easy to pour myself in on that.
That's pretty neat. I was just doing some research. I mean, it's really, when you look at how much time we all spend at work, at our jobs, and, you know, you think about if you can combine your talents with something that you're passionate about and you know that you're giving back. I just think that's where the magic comes in. Life is too short to go to a job that's not fulfilling. I'm a big believer. So Noah, I want to talk about some challenges that you face, both in your work, but also as somebody who leads change and is doing something different in the world. What are those biggest challenges that you see?
I like this question. I used to train teachers, and teaching is one of those things where you never feel like you're done, mastered it. Maybe kind of like, I'm pretty good at this, but you always, there's something you're sort of trying to get better at. What I started to see is the point of coaching is to try to get them to struggle with the next thing. Let's get onto the right struggles. So a new teacher is usually struggling with, how do I just organize the day? How do I get them to do the things that they need to do? But those teachers, I'm trying to get them to usually the next one, which is, when I'm teaching, how much should I just give them and how much should I make them work for it? Now, here's how you divide versus some activity where they go, oh, wait, I think I can split it up. Here's how I'm going to divide. But that takes a long time. And so it's not like one's the right answer. It's a tension. And so you should sort of be stressed about this, the right tension. For our organization, the right tension, I think, is something I mentioned earlier around how much do we meet teachers where they're at so that they use our program, and how much do we make it aspirational so that we pull them to what we think is a better expression of social emotional learning. So an example right now is videos. A year ago, we decided we're not going to make videos of our lessons. We want teachers to deliver these lessons. And a lot of this is connecting, having a conversation. COVID hit, we're making videos.
Yeah. You have to be nimble, right? Yeah. That's a good point.
But how, you know, now we have these videos, but I know that some people are just going to send out these videos. I did my social emotional learning. So how do we pull them a little bit to, well, can you do a shared journal? That's the tension that I'm really excited about. And the challenge for our organization is we pivoted from working with a few schools really intensely to working with lots of schools by providing this program as sort of plug and play. And so we're working hard on getting the word out. Your agency has been helpful with that, figuring out how to do that. So that's the biggest organizational challenge, I'd say, we're facing.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks for that shout out there. But yes, that tension is an interesting thing. I have to say, I just finished reading a book. I'm on a journey this year to read 60 books by the end of the year. I'm on 50 right now. But I just read a book called Building an A-Team. And it talks about that balance of encouragement in a work culture, but also the tension, because just that right amount of tension or stress, you know, really engages top level people and gets them to the next place. So I think that's an interesting, interesting topic. So Noah, what advice do you have for people out there who aspire to lead positive change? Because I think most of the people listening to us are people who want to make a difference in the world.
Well, I'll offer some advice, but I'd be more interested in someone reaching out to me and having an online coffee. But the things that have been helpful to me, two things come to mind. One is to find what people actually need and work on solving that problem. It's sort of one of those things where it's like hard to disagree with, like when someone says, like, well, let's keep our focus on the children. But it actually is easy to work on building programs or products that we think are good, but people don't actually need. And I guess the second thing relates a lot to that, which is something I learned at the last for-profit job. Did this great training with Jeff Gottfeld and Josh Seiden. They wrote this book, Lean UX, which is about lean product development, which we really took and tried to apply in many different places. And the central idea that that I took away from that is to ask as often as possible, what's the most important thing to learn next? And what's the fastest and cheapest way that we could learn that? I love that set of questions as an organizing principle, because we're always just trying to learn something. You know, if you want to keep your organization improving, maybe some don't, but if you do, that's a great way to do it. What do we want to learn? And then it's so easy to just pour a bunch of your time and money into something that doesn't pay off. So, you know, oh, we're going to make a video series. Let's just make one and see if people click on it. You know, or, you know, let's put a button on our website. Just see if people click on it. And then say, oh, you're welcome to a waiting. You know, those kind of moves, I've just found them so useful, because it's so frustrating to have worked for months on something and then nobody wants it.
Yes. I love that. I'm a huge proponent of start small and test, and then, you know, evolve, optimize, get bigger, start small and test. But yeah, having that working forever and having that big ta-da, I mean, it can be great and sometimes it's the right thing to do. But when you're in an entrepreneurial environment like you are and like I am, you know, being lean and building on things is really, really important. So, Noah, you've given us lots of great information, and I'm really interested to hear your answer to the next question, because I love motivational quotes. And I know that you are you don't like woo-woo things. I've read that on your website and we've talked, but I do love motivational quotes. And I'm curious, could you give us, in your own words, some words of wisdom?
Find a problem that you will enjoy fixing.
Oh, nice.
And for me, that comes from when I was a teacher, you know, New York City, there's lots of people in finance, lots of people making a lot more money, and they would say, oh, it must be so nice to really be able to just give and, you know your work is blah, blah. And it was so annoying because that only goes so far, you know, to how often can you think about all the lives you're changing? You know, you still have to go to work every day. And if you don't enjoy it, you're just not going to be able to keep it up. And then you're going to get bitter. And I had to leave teaching in the classroom, even though there were parts that I loved. It didn't really fit me as well as I thought it would. It's like I had an idea of what I wanted to do, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do.
That is fascinating. So. Great advice. Honestly, every high school student out there that's like thinking about what are they going to do next and starting on their career path, I think that's awesome advice. So I have to ask you just one question about marketing, because I'm a marketing person. What advice do you have for other change makers, entrepreneurs out there to help them with their marketing, advertising, or branding?
One thing that I actually learned from you is to have a tagline.
Great. That is good advice. That's really good advice.
I had not thought of that. We're going to have a board meeting and work on that. And I think the work of figuring out the tagline is really good, because the mission statement's nice and I think you got to have that somewhere. But the process of getting the tagline, I have a feeling it's really going to crystallize things and help us rally. You know, our internal tagline is like great SEL for the C+ teacher, you know, which is not, you know, not what we're putting on our website.
No, that's not going to do it for you, I'm pretty sure.
But that organizes our product development. So that's one thing. And the other is if you're small, is to have a really big focus on customer service. Because if you don't have your small group of customers fanatical about you, it's just not going to work out. And they're also going to teach you what you need to do. So just have coffee, talk with people that you're servicing, and they'll help guide you.
That's wonderful. Both of those great things, I would agree 100%. You mentioned earlier the virtual coffees. Do you think after the pandemic is over and we're done social distancing, do you think we'll still have virtual coffees with people, or will we return to coffee shops?
I miss coffee shops, but I think maybe we're all getting really good at this, even though we're a little burnt out on it.
Maybe.
We're all learning how to do this.
I think so too. It's fun to have coffee with somebody that's far away from you, right? I'm really connecting with friends and relatives that maybe in the past I would have thought that'd be weird to have a virtual coffee with my friend in Chicago, but now I can do that and it's kind of cool. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Noah, this has been really informative, really great. I actually appreciate teachers even now more than I did 20 minutes ago. For people who are listening who would like to learn more about the work of empowering education, how can they find out more about you?
Well, our website hopefully is very useful for that, empoweringeducation.org. If you go there and you're a teacher or a counselor or a parent, there's a free trial you can do for a couple weeks and try out a bunch of the lessons. And then I'm so excited that we also have a book. So if you go to wherever you buy books and look up Munchy and Jumpy Tales, you will find some of our children's stories. You'll sort of learn a bit about my kids, I think, because they helped write some of those stories.
That's awesome. Yeah. So tell me the name of the book again, Munchy and Jumpy Tales.
Munchy and Jumpy Tales, Volume 1.
Awesome.
We don't have Volume 2 out yet. We're waiting to see in a spirit of let's make sure. But we have them ready. We're just a bunch of work to get it all out there.
That is fantastic. Noah, you have such an interesting story, and I can see how kids and teachers would benefit from what you're doing. So thank you so much for sharing your story and your time today.
Well, thank you so much, Lynn.
You've been listening to Agency for Change. If you're enjoying these inspiring stories, please subscribe. Is there a changemaker you'd like to recommend for this podcast? Just visit the Kid Glove website at KIDGLOV.com to share or to listen to more stories about the people behind positive change.